Last week, Fiona Devoy was preaching, and she mentioned the theme verse that we have for this year, which is printed there in the notice sheet from 2 Corinthians, chapter 4:7. We have this treasure in jars of clay. And it struck me there's something else on the notice sheet that is there every week. Let's see if this works. Yeah, there is. It's our vision statement. This is something that we, as a church, agreed back in 2008. So that's 10 years ago we agreed this vision statement. Our aim as a church is to draw closer to God and to each other so that through us he can make known to all people the joys and challenges of following Jesus. Behind that, the words of that statement, if you've been around me long enough, you'll realize that there's a triangle. The statement talks about us actually facing in three different directions. Our aim is to draw closer to God, facing upwards, and to each other, facing inwards, to our fellow Christians, to our church, so that through us he can make known to all people, facing outwards. Upwards, inwards, and outwards. We know from the Gospels that Jesus lived his life facing upwards to God, inwards to his disciples, and outwards to the world. And he calls us to do the same. For a number of years now here at Liberton, we've taken this idea and this vision statement, and we've divided our year up into three seasons: a season of looking upwards, a season of looking inwards, and a season of looking outward. If you were here back in January, right up to Easter, was our season of looking upwards. And we looked at 1 Corinthians chapter 13, and we looked at what we learned through Jesus about God. God is love. And then after Easter, right up to the end of June, was our season of looking inwards, focusing on the church that God wants us to be. And we looked at John chapter 17, the church that Jesus prayed for. But now, with autumn approaching, and particularly with the big Alpha coming, we're beginning our season of looking outwards. But we first have to face up to a reality, I think. And that reality is that when it comes to looking outwards, we all get a bit nervous. When it comes to looking outwards, you know, facing the world, as Christians, we all tend to sort of, our confidence levels drop now. In fact, if everyone here were asked to do a quick exercise and mark themselves out of 10 for looking upwards and looking inwards and looking outwards, I can guarantee that in every single case, with a few minor exceptions, the score for looking outwards would be the lowest when it comes to all of us. Maybe it's just me, but you know, the confidence isn't quite there. We sort of think upwards, yes, Sunday worship, yes, prayer, yes, Bible study, yes. We're good at that. And we think looking inwards, whoa, helping out at church, yes. Getting involved in things, yes. Looking after each other, we're good at that too. But looking outwards, strangers, maybe it's just me, as I said. Apologies if this all is just going over your head and thinking, what's he talking about? We need a new minister. We all get a bit nervous. It's something to do with the age we're living in, you know, where it's actually, religion's got a bad name, and we don't want people to think we're weird, and all sorts of things. But here's two reasons why looking outwards really matters. The first is, If we don't do the out thing, what about all those people out there who are missing out? Growing number of people out there who are missing out. In an increasingly secular, materialistic world, they're missing out on the option of faith. They're missing out on the possibility. They're missing out on the choice. And as a result, are feeling more and more lost and confused. They don't have the spiritual resources to deal with life. And as Paul famously says How can they believe if they have not heard? So that's one good reason why we need to do the outward thing, however we feel about it. The other good reason is that the out thing is actually good for us too. In fact, without it, our faith tends to lose its balance. The inward thing suffers. You know, if there's no real reason for church apart from just church, then we tend to lose our purpose, and church becomes a way of simply meeting our spiritual needs rather than being part of something bigger, and we start moaning. A good symptom of a church that has lost its outwards focus is people are moaning. Oh, I don't like the hymns. You never hear that said here, do you? No. Or the organ's too loud, or the organ's too soft, or someone's sitting in my pew. You know, that's a sign of, you know, the inward focus is beginning to unravel because we're not looking outwards. And our connection with God suffers as well, because it's in stepping out of our comfort zones that our faith is honed and sharpened and God stays real. If we don't have that outward focus, then our connection with God, it may be very knowledgeable, but it starts becoming dry and static and losing its power on our lives, on everything. So that's why we need all three. Otherwise, we lose our balance, and if we lose our balance, we lose our shape, and everything starts to unravel. So we have a problem. We need to do the out thing, but we're not very good at it. And that's where this book comes in. It's a book by Mark Green. It's called Fruitfulness on the Frontline. Quite a few of you already bought copies, I saw, because we sold out of the copies that we brought in. And anybody else wants a copy, by the way, the Faith Missionist Bookshop has got plenty more. And I'm sure they'll still give you the discount. But it's called Fruitfulness. And this is the book that we're going to be dipping into over and over again over the next few weeks. Not next Sunday, because next Sunday is Holiday Club Sunday. But the following Sunday, and then for a few weeks, right into the middle of September, we're going to be dipping into this book again and again. Because the main point that Mark Green makes, and he makes this from the very start, is that we are actually a lot better at the out thing than we realize we are. And in many cases, we're already doing it. It's just we don't realize it. So it's a really positive and encouraging book. And if you get in the slightest bit nervous about the out thing or feel you can't do, have a look at this book. It's really good. He begins by making the point that as followers of Jesus, we're all called to be fruitful, and that the place to be fruitful is on our front lines. So before we can go any further, really, we need to answer two basic questions. What does he mean by being fruitful? And what does he mean by a front line? And we'll take the second one first. What does he mean by a front line? Is a front line somewhere we're called to go or to be? Is a front line some far-off mission field? What is a front line? Well, listen to what he says. And here's the quote. It's from page 26. By front line, says Mark Green, I'm primarily meaning a place or a time where we meet fairly regularly with people who don't know Jesus. A place or a time where we meet fairly regularly with people who don't know Jesus. So, where would my front line be? Or my front lines be? Where are the places and the times where I meet regularly with people who don't know Jesus? Now, I know what you're thinking. You're thinking, he's a minister. He gets paid to meet people regularly. You know, and it's true, as a minister, I do, you know, in carrying out my duties, for example, if someone asks me to take a funeral, or if someone asks me to marry them, not personally, obviously, but to conduct the service, then it brings me into contact with people who don't know Jesus. But if you take that sort of professional thing and just put it to one side and shut the door on it for a second, there's so many other ways in which in my life, the sort of life that you also live, I encounter people who don't know Jesus. For example, I I love having coffee across the road. Can I just recommend, just as a wee sort of aside, their decaf cappuccino? I mean, it's to die for, really. I mean, sometimes I think this is heaven. And their soups are just amazing. But that is not, you're thinking, we pay him to go and say. But their that is not why I spend time over in the cafe. I spend time over in the cafe because lots of people work there and lots of people go there who don't know Jesus. And it brings me into contact with them. So for me, it becomes a front line. See what I mean? It's easy. And it's the same with the halls. Hundreds of people use those halls every week for things that are nothing to do with church. There are hundreds of people coming through those halls who don't know Jesus. It's a sort of, in terms of front lines, it's an absolute gold mine. And then there's my neighborhood. I live in Kirk Park. And it's surprising how over the years you just get to know your neighbors very well, particularly when there's something wrong with the water supply. Just recently we've had terrible trouble with our water supply. And, you know, people with power showers, they've got to get up before 5 to be able to get a shower. And we love talking about that. And any chance we meet, there's someone, you know, doing their hedge. Oh, what do you think of the water supply? Oh, well, and then 3 or 4 other neighbors join you, and they're all talking about the water supply and getting active and passionate about it. But, I mean, that's a front line. And then there's my family, my ever-expanding family. That's a front line. So, and front lines can change. If I think about my life, one of my first front lines when I became a Christian was my fellow students, because I was at uni at the time. So there's a front line. I remember all the conversations I used to have with people who thought, what? You know, and of course, if they're friends, then they'll listen to why you become a Christian. And it becomes quite a positive, fruitful thing. My workplace, we used to have amazing conversations at my workplace. My workplace was quite unique in that there's 5 of us. One was a Chinese Christian, one was a Socialist Workers' Party, one was a Sikh, one was a Muslim, and there was me. And we, over lunchtime, we used to have all these fascinating conversations. And that was down in Leith. That was a front line. But then I moved on to something else. More recently, I was involved in this We Are Environmentalist group that existed for a while and then unraveled. But that was a front line. And right now I'm involved in this music group down along the north. That's a front line. We all have front lines when we stop and think about it. Places where we meet people regularly who don't know Jesus. But if we have these front lines, how do we use these opportunities? I mean, do we go up to them and say, well, hello, are you saved in the blood of the Lamb? I mean, is that, because often in people's minds, that's what being fruitful on the front line means. You know, you've got to go up and you've got to make sure they know they're going to hell unless they, you know, there's that sort of idea associated with it. Now, obviously, all that's true, and that's a scary part of it all, but it doesn't, you know, you've got to be quite a bit more diplomatic or subtle, maybe, in how you say things. The whole concept of fruitfulness is an interesting one, because what does it mean? This is the second question. What is fruitfulness on the front line? Because in a lot of our minds, it's to do with numbers, you know, saved souls. That is being fruitful. And a lot of the Bible teaching is statistical, if I can use that phrase. You know, Jesus in the parable of the sower talks about some 30-fold, some 60-fold, some 100-fold. He's being statistical there. He's talking about numbers. But a lot of his teaching is not about numbers. And Mark Green does an analysis of all the different times fruitfulness is used in the Old Testament and in the New Testament. And he comes up with this quote. And I'll just read to you what he says, because it's slightly expanded. I've just put a summary up there. Good fruit is any attitude, word, any action that pleases God. Remember the fruit of the Spirit. So you see what I mean? There's more to it than just statistics. Fruit is any consequence that is in line with God's will. An animal properly cared for, a local pond cleaned up, a person saved, healed, fed, given a cup of water, taught, corrected, trained in righteousness, defended, rescued from injustice, loved in any godly way. Fruit is anything done with authentic love. Let's have a look at what Jesus has to say about fruitfulness in today's reading. It's in John's Gospel, and it's chapter 15, and it's on page number 1083. And these are really well-known words that we've read and we've preached on and we've thought about many, many times. But today in particular, I want you to pay attention to the times Jesus mentions the word fruit in this passage. Okay, so let's listen to God's word. John's Gospel, chapter 15, and we'll just read the first 8 verses. Jesus says, "I am the true vine, and my Father is the gardener. He cuts off every branch in me that bears no fruit, while every branch that does bear fruit, he prunes, so that it will be even more fruitful. You are already clean because of the word I have spoken to you. Remain in me, and I will remain in you. No branch can bear fruit by itself. It must remain in the vine. Neither can you bear fruit unless you remain in me. I am the vine, you are the branches. If a man remains in me and I in him, he will bear much fruit. Apart from me, you can do nothing. If anyone does not remain in me, he is like a branch that is thrown away and withers. Such branches are picked up, thrown into the fire and burned. If you remain in me and my words remain in you, ask whatever you wish and it will be given you. This is to my Father's glory that you bear much fruit, showing yourselves to be my disciples." Amen. So here we have this wonderful image for the church throughout the world, the church with a big capital C. The church is like a vine. It's like a vine. It's made up of different branches. If you just think about the church throughout the world, you realize the truth of that. Or the church here, it's made out of different branches. And each branch has lots of individual twigs. I know Muir Twig's here. Where is he? Where's Muir Twig? There he is, but that's not what we mean here. We are all twigs, just for the day, honorary twigs, of honorary members of the twig family. But each twig is called to bear fruit. And that fruit is bunches of grapes. And as you know, there used to be a grapevine in the man's greenhouse, so I know all about grapes. But when it comes to fruitfulness, Jesus makes 3 important points. There's the first one, in verse 1. "I am the true vine, and my Father is the gardener. He cuts off every branch in me that bears no fruit, while every branch that does bear fruit, he prunes, so that it will be even more fruitful." The whole purpose, the whole point of every branch and every twig is to bear fruit, is to be fruitful. That's the point. Our purpose is not just to grow big, and not just to have lots of lovely, big green leaves. Our purpose is to produce the grapes. And I know this from experience, and you've heard me talk about this before. You know, when I had a vine, it was the summer drought that killed it, actually. I'm very sad about it. If you want to counsel me, you can do so afterwards. But round about early April, these shoots would spring up, and then from each little twigs on the shoots, tiny wee bunch of grapes would appear. And then you knew that you had to prune the branch. So instead of the branch going really long and this just staying tiny, you had to chop it there. And if you did that, all the goodness went into the grapes. That's what Jesus is talking about here. We don't exist for ourselves. We don't exist to grow big. We don't exist to be beautiful and have fantastic angelic worship. We exist to bear fruit. That's our purpose. No individual church, no individual denomination exists for its own glory. If we don't bear fruit, we are no use. Secondly, he makes 3, I think, important points. "I am the vine, you are the branches," says Jesus. "If you remain in me and I in you, you bear much fruit. Apart from me, you can do nothing. You can do nothing on your own." How many times do you hear someone saying, "Well, I'm a Christian, but I don't go to church. I'm a Christian, but I don't go to church." Doesn't make sense. You are part of the vine. You cannot exist apart from the vine. You cannot exist apart from the branches. It doesn't work. That's where your source of nourishment is. It's in Jesus. He's the true vine. You've got to be plugged in into him. If you're plugged into him, you can't be plugged into him and not be plugged into everybody else who's part of the vine. It just doesn't work. We cannot bear fruit without being connected to Jesus, who holds us and sustains us and nourishes us. We cannot bear fruit unless we're connected to each other. I have a voice, you have a voice, we have a voice, and when we sing together, and then the third point he makes is right at the end. This is to my Father's glory, that you bear much fruit, showing yourselves to be my disciples. Yes, we are all called to be disciples. And as disciples, we are all called to bear fruit. It's not something we can leave to everybody else. Oh, they're much better at it than me. No, we are. It's part of who we are. It defines who we are, bearing fruit. But the whole point of being fruitful is to point people to God. It is to my Father's glory that we bear fruit. Remember Mark Green's summary of fruitfulness. Any attitude, word, or action that pleases God, anything that is in line with his will, anything that is done in authentic love. When we do this, and when we do this on our front lines, it opens a window into God's kingdom. When we bear fruit on our front lines, God gets to work. And the whole point of doing this is not to glorify ourselves, but to point people to God, to point people to his kingdom, to open up the possibilities in people who don't know Jesus, of having Jesus in their lives and the difference it can make. Over the next few weeks, we're going to be looking at how we can be fruitful on our front lines. And Mark Green identifies six different ways, and he calls them the six M's. And it's interesting. He says we can bear fruit on our front lines by modeling godly character, by making good work, by ministering grace and love, by molding culture, by being a mouthpiece for truth and justice, and by being a messenger of the gospel. And the important thing to notice there is only one of those six ways involves us actually sharing our faith, and that's the last one. But God can use us in all of these other ways as well. And in fact, if you find, and this is my experience, the more I do these other things, the more people are interested in my faith. And so the easier it becomes to share my faith with them. George Kay used to be an elder here, and he died a few years ago, and he was a lovely man. He was one of life's enthusiasts. Hands up if you remember George Kay. Yeah, you probably know what I mean. He was one of life's enthusiasts. He's always coming up with ideas. We must do it. And he really pushed me, and I thought, oh, no, George Kay's come up with an idea. But one thing that he was really, really passionate about was just that, drawing people to Jesus, telling people about them. But he talked about, you need to warm people up. He was actually a door-to-door salesman. Now, I'm not equating sharing the gospel with door-to-door salesman. But he said, if you're a salesman, you need to warm people up. You can't just go cold and say, buy this refrigerator. They'll say, why? I don't know you. You need to build relationships. You need to get to know people. And he took that philosophy. We had to sort of work with him on that, so it became a bit more palatable to maybe the way God wanted things to happen. Bless you, George. But he's true. It's right. You know, just the cold thing. It's nowhere near as effective as people who are warmed up, who already know you, who already trust you. I'm not saying that in complete isolation, someone in a point of desperate need is not open to hearing the gospel from a stranger. I'm not saying that. But what I am saying is we can use our frontiers to warm people up, to get to know them, and we do that by modeling these six M's. And the more we do that, the more they're interested in our faith, the more they want to hear about it. So, let's just review what we've learned today, and then I'm going to ask Grant. Where's Grant? Grant, you want to sort of start making your way up? Jesus calls us to live lives that face upwards to God, inwards towards each other, but also outwards towards the world. If we don't do all three suffer. Looking outwards means leading fruitful lives, lives which point people to God. And looking outwards means recognizing where our front lines are. Now, the reason I've asked Grant to come up is because, completely unconnected with everything I've been saying, Grant has been pestering me to tell you about something. But it is actually Grant's front line, or one of the many front lines that Grant has. And so, Grant, over to you. Tell us about this thing that
Good morning, folks. This is the background. It's to do with the Kirk Centre garden. Well, speaking to the building convener, Derek Jarden, over many weeks, it was clear that Derek and his Ardilands team and Ian Strachan, the keen gardener, were needing help in the centre garden. The scouts through Aileen Dees and Sandy Moyer cut the grass. They get paid a small amount for each cut, and this towards their funds. Other than that, we don't pay anybody to anything in the garden, so we're needing volunteers. So to help, I decided I would set up a display stand at the recent Liberton District Community Council Gala Day, which were held in the church halls. So I took photographs. They're probably up there. There they are there. And they're also on the tables. I took photographs of the garden and had them enlarged. With green words and chatting, I invited visitors. I don't need them, John. It's all right. I've mentioned it. With green words and chatting, I invited visitors interested in helping for an hour a week to add their names to a clipboard. Well, to my absolute joy, Jenny Lucas of the church and three non-church members added their names: Dave Cuthill, Ray Black, and Michael Thompson. After my holiday, I phoned and invited them to come for coffee at 10 o'clock last Monday morning. Neither Gerald nor Derek could make it, but George Tom and Ian Strachan joined Dave, Ray, and me at 10 o'clock. After introductions over coffee, we went outside. We looked at all that is needing done, chairs needing repaired, and what is going well, and things that aren't going well. We did some weeding and tidied up the compost corner, which really needs tidied up. Unnoticed, new man Ray had popped back to the coffee and brought us cool drinks, and we chatted about this and that, to which the late, great Chick Murray would have added, about which I know very little. However, to be more serious, couldn't resist it. To be more serious, the aim is firstly to seek help in the garden. It's there for the community, as is the cafe, but also to bring church and non-church people together and to enjoy each other's company. Maintenance with a mission, Derek said yesterday, bring non-church people closer to the church. So if anyone can help for an hour a week or know of neighbours who may have what I described in the stand as having restless green fingers for whatever reason, perhaps they've moved into a flat or recently retired, time to help us in the garden, or talents in pottering, please come along and invite others along on a Monday morning at 10 o'clock. But quite simply, my stand bore more fruit than I could have expected at the start, right from our doorstep. So encouraging and so worth reaching out. That's the story.